My name is Chuck Evans. I work with a group. I'm a full-time consultant with a group called Paideia Incorporated. Not related to Mortimer Adler's Bat Paideia. We're our own Paideia. My association with Paideia started when I was asked to be the founding head of a classical and Christian secondary school in Roanoke, Virginia. Faith Christian School. It's now K-12 or pre-K-12 even. I'm not sure if they've got younger kids there. But I had no idea what I was doing, first of all. I think I worked chief, and that was I was willing to work chief, and that was the first criterion. But about halfway through the first year, I'm not a financial genius or anything at all, but I could see that we were not going to make it based on the way that the numbers looked. I couldn't figure out how to match the low revenue with the high expense that we had already partially incurred, and that was coming. I knew that was going to be that much more a part of our reality. So I happened at a conference to sit in a session that was led by my computer is doing this for some reason. So I'll try not to let it annoy me if you don't let it annoy you. I was in a session with Ron Grosch, who is a Paideia consultant, on basic money matters for schools. The two fundamental principles of which are cost-based tuition and need-based tuition assistance as the combination of the priorities that allow a school a sustainable financial future, absent what we all dream of, an endowment. And we'll talk about that briefly in just a few minutes. Endowments don't happen by accident. They have to happen intentionally, and any school can have an endowment. Right? Tomorrow, all you need is a bank account and some money in it, and now you've got an endowment. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Paideia snatched us out of the financial fire, helped us to figure out a more realistic pricing structure combined with an investment in quality that actually made our school more valuable to parents. And over the next 2 years, we doubled tuition and we doubled enrollment simultaneously. So what I'm talking about with you today, I have implemented in all three of the schools that I've served in a variety of circumstances, from a year one startup to with 40 students, to an older school with 750 students, and an in-between scenario. And I believe that the evidence of our work and the dozens and dozens of schools that have been helped through these principles, I believe it works. And no school is exactly the same. Every school has different circumstances. And you have to figure out, you have to be prudent about how you implement these principles. But absent something else, some other outside source of funding that you know is going to be there for the long term, I believe that the schools that do this will still be around in the 21st century, and the schools that don't will not. And that's just the plain truth of it. So we're going to start with, I'm going to start with a quiz. Raise your hands. If, please, and I really do want you to raise your hands, if you believe that if you could, your school should charge each student all or more of what it costs to educate each student in your school. Raise your hand if you believe that. All right? Keep your hands up. All right? Good. Everybody. Yes? Everyone? Keep your hands up. All right? So almost everybody. Keep your hands up if you believe that to the extent that you do not charge the full cost of educating each student, you adversely affect the quality of education that you are able to provide to each student. Do I need to read that again? Okay? So what we call the quality gap. cost is here, tuition's here, that's your quality gap, whatever it is, okay? Keep your hand up if, in 2008 and 2009, your school will charge what it costs to educate each student. Okay? No. No excuses.
So you have to have a balanced budget.
Everything it costs you to operate your school needs to be paid for through tuition. Through tuition. Or fees. Okay?
Except
what I think is
hardening. All the quality we rely
on. Okay. Right. So you have a quality gap, but the quality gap is not a funding issue, it's a vision issue. It's a commitment issue. All right, that's a separate thing. You need other help for that. Raise your hand if you know the average rate of inflation in 2007. Anybody know? Well, generally, what do you think? I mean, it that was a little high. Yeah, it was 4.1, something like that, which was double 2006. Yeah, nationally, yeah. Carol's got special circumstances.
Yes, yes,
nationally, the average rate of inflation was 4.1%. That was double what it was the year before. Okay, important to know. All right? Raise your hand if you know how much more inflation is typically calculated for private school costs above the larger economy. Does anybody know that number? Okay. Raise your hand if, when your school set tuition, you began with the premise that if you do not charge at least as much more as the applicable rate of inflation, you will have less to spend this year per pupil than last year. Okay? All right? So, let's say that the rate of inflation is 4.1%. If I raise tuition 4.1%, I have exactly the same money and spending power as I had the previous year. I've made no improvement. If I charge less than 4.1%, I've lost money. I'm losing money on each student. I've got less spending power per student. And if I didn't raise tuition at the applicable rate of service industries, as that calculates for schools in particular, the calculation the ISN does, which is about 2+%, then I've lost that much more money. So, if we didn't raise tuition from last year to this year, 6.1%, you have less money to spend per student than you had last year, even if you're charging, quote-unquote, what it costs. Does that make sense? So your quality just went down that much to the extent that the money matters on that. Yes? ISM has a really good research on this. It's related to a service industry calculation. The guy who did it at Harvard got a Nobel Prize for it. But it has to do with efficiency. We can't, because service industries are labor intensive, we can't produce efficiency in production like manufacturing can. We can't technologize what we do to the extent that other industries can, and so our costs always rise faster than the larger economy. Okay? And you can get that, by the way, from ISM. It's an issue of issues and perspectives, of IMP, ideas and perspectives, yeah. Okay? Raise your hand. If your school charges one price that includes all fees so that parents know exactly how much this education costs, how many of you have your parents write one check, and then that's it? Maybe they don't pay it all at once, but there's one price that they pay. No fees, nothing else. No add-ons for trips or anything. Anything. They pay one price, and they get everything when they pay that one price. Okay? By the way, if the parents don't see that number, they typically think that the education costs less than it does, and it's a nice little trick, but it comes back around and affects the way that we budget as well, and typically has we underestimate our budgets because of that. All right, so we're not being honest. Second, not honest like in a moral sense. We're not lying. We're not being frank with ourselves about what this thing is really costing when we plan. raise your hand if your school charges a flat tuition on the premise that a ninth grade education is just as valuable as a third grade education. Working with the school right now, last year to this, the school went from four stages of tuition, averaging about $7,700 per student to this year, everyone, and from full day kindergarten through ninth grade, paying $9,360. In an area, by the way, where the economy is downturn and the mortgage crisis is awful. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Raise your hand if your school can confidently put qualified applicants in a waiting pool rather than be pressured to open sections that may not pay for themselves. How many of you have done this before, where you've got two or three or four kids and you just don't want to lose them, and so maybe you open a section of half-filled, two sections of half-filled classes, neither of which pay for themselves, because we don't want to lose that family, because, well, the family may be really nice or cool or whatever, but usually is we don't want to lose that tuition. So we want to spend more than we're actually taking in order not to lose the tuition. That's a bad idea, by the way. Okay? So what is our sustainable financial position for our school? What is absent outside funding from an endowment that is long-term and we know it's going to be there? Absent that, and I don't mean gifts, because gift support comes and goes. People give 1 year, they may not give another year. Okay? The only sustainable, the only gifts that contribute to sustainability are endowment gifts. Gifts to the endowment. Okay, so absent that, what is our sustainable financial position? What's our goal? The goal is for your tuition to rise faster than the applicable rates of inflation and for there to be more demand than supply for your school. This is our financial goal for our school. If your school is not in this position, then it's not sustainable. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to be there. It might mean it's not going to be there. But what it does mean is that your school, the institution, and your mission are financially at risk. So how do we get ourselves, what principles do we employ in order to get ourselves to this position? 10 distinctives of a healthy financial school. There are more, there are less. Okay? These are just 10. That if you can say that this is true about your school, then it follows, it stands to reason that you should be on your way to this position. Okay? You may not be there yet, and you may not do all of these things all at once, but all of these things are things that you can do in your next financial planning cycle that will start to move your school toward this position of financial sustainability. Number one, budgets are crafted at least 3 years at a time. We don't do annual budgets because annual budgets don't tell us enough about the implications of this year's financial situation on the future. And what we find is that when we do our financial planning just a year at a time, we keep getting surprised when we get to the next budget cycle and go, ooh, I didn't know that was going to happen. What are we going to do about that? The other thing it does is it helps us to focus on where will the revenue stream come from. Where is the money going to come from? And instead of me sitting down and going, well, you know, I think by the end of next month we might have this many students, so then, okay, that means I can do this budget. Okay, instead of the passive, this is the students I've got, so this is the budget that I can afford, it motivates thinking about growth. And it puts the pressure back on me as a head and my staff and my board to promote the school, because promoting the school, ultimately we rely on tuition. There's no other substitute for that. Long-term, sustainable substitute for tuition. And tuition's driven by enrollment. And if we don't have goals for enrollment, then number one, what are we accountable to from a growth and a management standpoint? How is our performance going to be evaluated as the leaders of our schools? And secondly, how are we going to plan for growth? How can we say to parents, well, this year we're going to build this piece of the program, and then next year we're going to expand to this, and then the year after that we're going to expand to this, and start to cast a vision in our parents' minds for the value of this education and seeing it increase over time? Because tuition is not going down, is it? Well, tuition might go down, but the cost isn't going down. Sometimes we make foolish political decisions, and we say, well, you know, we really raised tuition a lot last year, so we better not raise it this year. Okay? Well, what we've just told the parents is that the cost of this education sometimes doesn't go up. And so in those years, we can afford to charge you less money than we charged you last year. And it's not true. But what have we done? We've just conditioned the parents to start to think, well, tuition doesn't always have to go up because the cost of this sometimes is level. And it never is. It never is. It can't be. So budgets are crafted at least 3 years at a time. Number two, budgets are meticulously honest about costs. Honest about costs. How many of us provide automatic discounts to either families for multiple children or to faculty as part of their compensation? Okay, so whatever it is. Is that discount in your profit and loss statement? Is it accounted for? Is it a real dollar number that has to be paid for? Okay, that's the kind of meticulous honesty that we have to provide. We tell ourselves sometimes that, well, we have to pay for this anyway, and so we have to pay for this classroom, and so putting another kid in there doesn't really add to the real cost. It's not real dollar cost. But it has to be, because how do you distinguish at what point that student stops costing you money? Because he costs something. Okay? So he either costs you everything or he costs you nothing. So those numbers have to be in there as an example. What are other costs that we tend to hide from ourselves in the budgeting process? Pretend that they're not there. Pretend that they're not really costing us.
One we ran into was we tried to say that the tuition is this and you get a discount to pay early.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody started thinking that early payment was the real tuition.
Yeah.
And we wanted to raise all that. So that, we started putting that as a separate line.
Yeah. That's just giving away money, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what that is. Yeah. By the way, I would never recommend, we'll talk about discounts in a minute, but never, ever give somebody, charge less tuition because someone can pay full tuition. Only charge more to the people who you're financing. You're being the bank to the families who are paying over time. Because that tuition is yours when you say it's yours. Okay? No one's entitled to pay for anything over time. All right? If I want a car and I'm keep that car for 5 years, the car dealer doesn't let me just pay him for as much as I'm using it. Okay? The bank will finance it for me at a fee, but the car dealer needs his money before I take the car, even if I'm going to drive it for 5 years. All right? Same thing, same principle applies to tuition. You need that money when you need the money, and you need the money when the student starts school. Because you've already made commitments. That money's spent. It's yours. Okay? And you're financing the education of students who are there by allowing them to pay over time. They should pay you a fee. If they can get that money cheaper, let them get it cheaper. But don't give money, give tuition away to the family that can afford or has the discipline to pay you all the tuition at once. Right? It's a benefit to people who don't need the benefit. Third, that was off the point, but it's a good point. Third, budgets balance with less than 5% of revenue from unfunded sources. Now, I've just gotten finished saying that you need to cover all of the costs in tuition. But here's the caveat. The caveat is that we need to build giving habits. And we also need money in the budget to provide for capital expenses as we build programs or as we do minor adjustments or additions, improvements to our facilities. And so we'll give you the wiggle room of 5% of your operating budget to raise in an annual fund campaign. Now, what I recommend, this is what I've done in my schools, is that you're raising annual fund money a year ahead of when you're going to need it. So I'm not raising the money this year, and if I don't get the money, somehow I've put my budget in a deficit. My annual fund for 2008-2009 is going to be a revenue line item in 2009-2010. Does that make sense? And it takes a little discipline to kind of get over that hump the first year, because you have to raise more money or you have to defer the expenditure of that money, put it in reserve, and hold it for the next year. But once you have that pattern established, then it makes everything go better. It makes everything go better. Fourth, budgets include reserves. Include reserves. Your reserve line in your budget should be as sacred as your salary line in your budget. At the end of the year, we've got more income than the designated percentage of reserve, and we place that in savings. Why do we have more income? Why should we have more income? Or more money? What?
Are you referring back to the annual fund?
At the end of the year, why have I not spent my whole budget?
Because if you have the annual fund money, you're going to
raise
it with the funds in the spring.
Okay.
And you're not using it.
So that's one. That's one possibility, is that we're raising money for subsequent years, or we've exceeded our annual fund goal in any year, which we want us to. What's another reason why we shouldn't have spent our whole budget? Because the budget's conservative, and especially our revenue expectations, right? So we should be taking in more money than we thought we would take in. And we should be managing to spend less than we thought we were going to spend. Just basic fiscal prudence, conservatism. But if we don't have honest budgets, we can't do that. If we have budgets that have little gotcha line items in there that we forgot about or didn't admit to ourselves, and it's always there, but it's just one of those. Well, that's an off budget item. Okay, what is that? That's pretense. Number five, budgets accommodate up to 30% of families receiving some amount of need-based tuition assistance in any given year. People ask me all the time, what percentage of your budget should be committed to tuition assistance? And by the way, when we talk about need-based tuition assistance, we talk about it in terms, again, assets, outside funds that are committed in a sustainable way to tuition assistance. You include tuition assistance in your cost to educate. It's a line item right in there with curriculum, right in there with salaries, right in there with, football jerseys, whatever else you've got in your thing, in your budget. But you want to position yourself. So we give this question, how much of the budget should be committed to this? And that's going to vary. It's going to vary depending on what part of the country you are. It's going to vary somewhat on the economy in your area. It's going to vary depending on your tuition. But from the terms of the families that we are positioned to serve in any given year, I like to look at 30%. Expect that 30% of my families are going to need some form of tuition assistance, even if it's only, say, 10 or 15%. And it's somewhat arbitrary, but it's a pattern that I've seen in the schools that I serve.
And how do you figure that number?
How much money that is? You work that off of patterns that you've seen in tuition assistance over the last few years. And you can look at it. Let's say if any given year, let's say last 3 years, you've had about 20% of your family, then it costs you X dollars. Just add a 10% proportion or 50% proportion to that, and it's going to come out roughly at that dollar figure. Yeah. Well, students, I guess. Yeah. Or, well, I mean, the families are the ones who are applying. Yeah. Yeah, essentially, I am. Yeah. You're right. It would be a lower percentage of actual families if you've got lots of families with multiple kids. Of course, those, you know, if you're a K-12, you're going to have more families with more kids in the school than a smaller school. Okay, number six. This is our inflation benchmark. Tuition increases annually at least 2% above the standard rate of inflation, and rarely more than 6% above the standard rate of inflation. Two pieces to that. First of all, on the 2% side, we always have to raise tuition at least to cover what we know our costs are going to be, and that's based on the value of the money. The second piece is that if we are setting tuition prudently and consistently, we're going to avoid what a lot of schools find themselves doing, and that is raising tuition very moderately for a number of years, or raising tuition less than they need to, and then all of a sudden finding themselves really behind, and then what do? We stick everybody with a 12% increase in tuition, and the parents go nuts. You know, and they say, you just did this to us 4 years ago. And what do we say? I mean, our answer should be, if we're honest, we're sorry, we haven't been planning well. And if we continue what we've been doing, we're going to do this to you again another 4 years. And that's what we should say to them. All right? Now, I mean, that's what we should not have to say to them. So if I see that absent some big, heavy, or some major expansion in programming, tuition rising more than 10%, 12% in a year, then there's a planning issue in there somewhere.
But what did you say? When we did a 9% and then 8%,
mm-hmm.
and our parents are freaking out.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's what it's costing you. All you're doing is keeping up. At your 9%, you're just keeping up and staying just a little ahead. Yeah, and they're still freaking out. One of the things that I'm finding helps with that is just a lot of transparency about where the money is. And show the pie charts and help them understand that, you know, this is the way that the costs work. And oh, by the way, you know, we need a stable faculty. We need an experienced faculty. In order to produce or deliver what we promised. You appreciate the teachers who've been here for 15 years, and guess what? They're a lot more expensive than they were 15 years ago. Have to be. So you have that logical conversation with parents. They might still freak out. I mean, in the end, how do we know that they're buying what we're saying? They still sign up. They pay. They do the value proposition, and they say, this is still worth it to us. Okay. You can help in that, but yeah, you can't control their emotions. No one receives automatic tuition discounts. Yep. Good.
Something bizarre
at Veritas Christian School, I can't imagine. Something outside the box, Tech?
We do see
that in
faculty
discounts. That's not bizarre. It's becoming more and more the case. No faculty discounts. No automatic tuition discounts. Everybody pays full tuition, or they apply for tuition assistance. And if they qualify, then they receive tuition assistance. And you know it's adequate because you've planned for it. You've planned for it. Now, why do we not offer automatic tuition discounts? What are some of the discounts that we offer? Multiple child, faculty, any other discounts, automatic discounts? What? Early pay discount. Oh, what church? Mission? If you're a pastor or a missionary, you get a vocational discount. Yeah. If you pay all the tuition when we say, then we give you some of the tuition back. It's a rebate program. It's not working for GMAC or for GM either, by the way. Okay? Here's why we don't do that. All right? Number one, our financial sustainability depends on tuition. And providing discounts to people who don't need it gives tuition away. And every dollar that goes away contributes to the quality gap that everybody else in the school suffers from. Okay, so that's number one. So just because a family has five kids doesn't mean they can't afford five full tuitions. Now, they might not be able to afford it, but it's not an automatic thing that they can. And if they don't want to afford it, that's their business. It's their responsibility before God to educate their kids the way that they see fit. And if they don't want to pay five full tuitions, even though they can afford it, then they don't have to. They don't have to. That's their responsibility. So that's the underlying premise. Okay. When it comes to faculty, same thing applies, but now you've got a slightly more complex issue, is that we're giving a benefit to people, number one, they might not need financially, number two, that is a more substantial benefit to some employees than others. Now, I know there's not complete parity in benefits, and medical benefits are one of the best examples. But medical benefits, usually the result of somebody not receiving the benefit isn't that they don't need it, it's that they don't want it. Okay? They've got coverage from another source. Okay? So the benefit is there, provided for them, should they want it, should they need it, but they've opted out. Alright? Same thing doesn't apply necessarily with a tuition discount. So we're paying the people with school age children in our school more than we're paying the other. Okay? And that's an issue. Of equity. Yep. You have to experiment with it. I mean, you basically, there's no perfect assessment. People are not always honest as they say they are. And so there's no perfect tool, whether you do it internally, externally, you know, I've seen 100 different experiments with this. In the end, what makes your tuition assistance program manageable is experience with it and watching the patterns over 3 or 4 cycles. And once you've done 3 or 4 cycles and you develop your own philosophy of tuition assistance in your school, for example, some schools will add a penalty in the calculation for a family who has a spouse, all the children are in school, but the second spouse doesn't work. Okay? Now that's a value choice that they make. We might think that's really honorable. We might even think it's biblical. I don't know. But you know, if they could be working and making some contribution to their child's tuition, why should the rest of the school carry that burden for them? Okay, some schools do that. You know, then they get it. Some schools really get into the details, car payments and, you know, age of cars and that sort of thing. You got a lot of debt and all of this, and so it's up to you to decide how, to what extent you want to get into those details and work for, you know, as close as you can to parity. But the thing that does it is experience over time. And the more you work, by the way, with one company instead of jumping around from company to company to company, the better off you are, because you can see the patterns then. And most companies now have a way for you to affect the way that they calculate based on what your school's values are.
How do you practically, as long as you're hooked on it, how do you get off of it?
Well, you have to address the underlying causes. Okay, that's step one. One of the reasons that we give automatic discounts to faculty is because we're guilty. It's guilt money. We know that we're not paying the market value, but we don't want them to run off on us. And so we find a way for the kids to be in school, which holds them into a low-paying job, but they're getting the benefit of the education. So you have to, if that's an underlying reality in your automatic discounts, you have to address that.
We require your students to do this to faculty
members. You have to address that too. You got to decide what you want. You know, and lots of schools have gotten past that sort of, you know, that insecurity about, well, what does it say about us if the teachers don't send their kids here?
Uh-huh.
Who cares? And the teachers are parents too. They have a responsibility to educate their children just like all the rest of us. You know, what does it say about us if anybody doesn't send their kid to our school? So maybe you have to work through that. Okay? But the underlying issue is the motivation for the discounts. You have to understand them. You have to know where they started. You have to be willing to address those. And then you start looking at the dollars and figure out, how do we transition ourselves out of this in a way that makes sense, but, you know, doesn't just throw everything into chaos. This is a big one. This is a big one. And by the way, we're one of the few companies anymore that really stands on this as a principle. Because lots and lots of schools give automatic discounts for all sorts of things. All sorts of things.
I'll tell you, one thing we found, because we had one brought all those years ago, and you saw the possibility of that, and people initially say, well, buy it, but as soon as you explain why, I've never had anyone disagree with that one.
Well, and you have to be able to say to them too that we have planned sufficiently so that we know that the tuition assistance that's available is going to cover the need, the actual mathematical need that exists. If you can't say that, and you start pulling benefits away from people, that they're used to, and you don't have a way to cover the need, well, you're really, I mean, that's not going to help you at all. You're just a mean, you know? Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. Yeah, they say, we're a better school. Well, you have to demonstrate that. I mean, if you're not a better school than those schools that are giving discounts, give the discounts, but you're not going to be in business long anyway. If you are a better school, you don't have to give the discounts. Because you want to be able to trust parents to do the value proposition that says, I'm willing to pay more for a better product. And if a parent's not willing to pay more for a better product, then, I mean, what are they going to contribute to the life of your school ever? They're just there for the price. They're there because it's easy. Is that worth it? Is that worth the cost, the expense to the viability and sustainability of your mission, which ought to exceed all the other schools, or you should know how it exceeds all the other schools that you're competing with? So key point on being able to charge what it costs is knowing that in your own mind that this is worth it. Now, we have a tendency to undervalue this. We get insecure. We're young, small, we don't have beautiful buildings, all of that. Okay? But the educational result is what people are paying for. That's what they want for the child. It's nice that if we have shiny new buildings, and it's nice if we have 17 basketball courts or whatever it is, but what they really want is the educational result. And as classical schools, we're in the best position to say, this is a result that is worth the investment. You're not going to get this anyplace else. And oh, by the way, it's expensive. Because it's good.
Would they say that's kind of the key point in the marketing to keep that educational result?
Call it your mission. Your marketing is your mission. That's right. Your marketing is your mission. And your mission is defined by the result.
It really
Now, if you're the result, if you got a really great mission and your result is inconsistent to the mission, that's a quality issue. And you need new leadership or you need more vision or whatever it is. But your mission is the heart of the value. Good. Late pools total 10% of total enrollment. This is somewhat of an arbitrary number, but if that's my goal, then I've got something to shoot for, and it helps me to discipline myself not to just grab people and pull them in no matter what, because it's actually a financial sustainability goal. And by the way, from a marketing standpoint, I know this is counterintuitive. The school that's hard to get into is the school that everybody wants. And what you'll see is that when you start disciplining yourself to build weight pools, is that those weight pools start growing exponentially on top of one another. It's crazy, but it's true. 90% of gifts in a 5-year period provide funds to capitalize expansion or the endowment. Even if I've got a 5% annual fund goal that's going to operations in the current year, what I want to do is that over 5 years, I want to be able to show that 90% of all the money I raised was advancing the mission and not just paying the bills. Maybe 10% over a 5-year period, depending on our budget cycles and depending on our enrollment projections, all that. Maybe, you know, I need to hurry up. Maybe all of that, maybe we needed more than we wanted to support operations. But I want to see that as we raise money, we're primarily raising money for the future. That's where people want to give. And then number 10, the endowment grows every year. We were in a session in Houston, and my boss, Bruce Lockerbie, was talking about an endowment. This was just one school. It was a day-long seminar with the faculty and board members and everybody who's hammered on the importance of the endowment. Point is, you don't have an endowment. You won't have an endowment until you create the vehicle for the endowment. At the end of the session, 4 board members each wrote $100 checks independently and brought them up to hand them to the headmaster and said, open the endowment fund on Monday. Now they have an endowment fund. And every year it's going to grow. Well, most years. It's going to grow over time. We know it's going to grow. Miracle compound interest and all that. But now we also have something else for people to give to. For people who have that long-term strategic mindset about their own giving, there's a vehicle now for them to give to. And that endowment will grow. You can also designate portions of your reserve, your budgeted reserve, or a portion of your annual fund every year, so that you're making consistent contribution over into the endowment fund. And that matters. That's going to matter. The economy out there is tighter than ever. Private schools are going to, it's not going to get easier for us from a financial standpoint over the next 50 years. The schools with an endowment will be here. Schools without endowments may not. They may not. And we see schools, every time there's an economic downturn, we see schools that haven't planned for the future, they just disappear. 1,000 students shut down. Don't open up next year. Because they've got themselves in such a predicament with no backstop, with no way to weather the financial crisis. They just go away. Just like that. I'm going to talk about one thing real quickly. I'm going to run through this. Charge what it costs based on realistic enrollment expectations from the very beginning. This is hard for young schools, I know. If you're here and you're in a young school, it's a lot of insecurity that sort of builds up and go, how can we do that? You know what it costs. If you're here and you're in a school and you're charging $4,500 or $7,200 or something, you know your school costs you more than that. The question is, how do we get there? How do we get there? And if we go there, aren't we just going to lose all the people that we've already got, and then we're back to square one? All right, why would we do that to ourselves? Here's something for you to think through. If your school costs, let's say K to 5, your school costs $600,000 to operate. All right, that's your current cost. At an average of 10 students, all right, 60 students, that works out to a $10,000 cost per student. All right, now, as a young school, meeting in a church basement, you've only got 60 kids. how in the world are we going to charge $10,000? Okay? But if we had only an average of 10 students per class, that $10,000 in those six grades would cover our costs. So here's what happens. We say we can't charge $10,000, so we're going to charge $7,500. But if we only get 12 students, two more students per class because of the discounted rate, it puts us in a deficit already. And now we've got to start raising money to pay the bills. The only way to get here, I did the calculation on this, you have to have a third more students come to your school because of the lower price in order to get back up to $600,000 revenue. What are the chances of that? So if we look at it and we say, we can probably have 10 families of $10,000 with some per class, 10 kids per class of $10,000 with, and that allows us to build in tuition assistance support. So now we've actually got more money available for families who can't pay full tuition than we would have at $7,500 because our budget's in better shape. We have more dollars to spend per qualifying family. Over 5 years, this becomes the difference between having $300,000 in the bank because I've been raising it for the future rather than to pay the bills versus having nothing. So the other thing that tuition assistance, or that cost-based tuition does for you is it allows you to raise money for the future. I'm working with a school right now in California. We've been working on this. This is the school that went from 77 to 93 flat tuition across the board. One of the reasons, the compelling reason for the board to go ahead and bite that bullet and to do it, and by the way, over 90% of the families re-enrolled. A whole bunch of other things, but one of the compelling reasons was looking at the gift income stream and realizing that if we had been charging tuition from the beginning, we would have over $1 million for the new campus that we desperately need right now. $1 million down the drain, gone. And I know it went into the school and building the school and all of that, right? But by disciplining ourselves to know what this costs and be willing to say, I'm sorry it's expensive, but it is what it is. Private school is expensive. It just is. We can't make it not be expensive. There's no way. So, quality private school is expensive. Okay? By disciplining ourselves to do that, we put ourselves now in a position where even as a young school, we can ask people to start investing in the future of the school instead of helping us to support the present. Charge what it costs to establish a reputation. Oh, I need to stop there because we're really out of time. But we'll just stop there. Charge what it costs. And if you have any, well, we'll have the plenary, but I'll be around. And you have my contact info if you want help figuring out how to make this happen in your school. Yes?
One thing I don't think anyone answers that. I think there are a number of schools that are under our initiative of church.
Yeah. This year, working with the school, ministry of a church, new headmaster, new board leadership for the school, better communication with the church. The assumption had always been that the church didn't want the school to be elitist, and so the school had never really pushed the financial issue. They decided to push the financial issue because we're not the school that we should be. We're dishonoring our mission, and ultimately the mission of the church, by not being the school that we can be. There is tuition 20% this year. The church is blessing. Church said, we want you to be a great school. And if you can tell us that this is gonna produce the great school that we want to be associated with, then you have our blessing to do it. Of course there are. And then there are other decisions that might have to be made. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
We've not started at school yet.
Yeah.
I started because the team recommended salaries and benefits and how much.
Yeah. I mean, there are. Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, you have to, every school's got to work it out, just like every business has got to figure out, you know, what their model or the application of their model looks like. But yeah, there's stuff available through, you know, a number of sources, us or ISM or any of the other sources. Yeah. Yeah. All right.